to reach, you know, when we can talk about, you know, the problem of the presence of the Israeli regime in this country, in this region, having been solved, we can say that Iran has basically approached this goal. Yeah. If we can talk about independence of this region as a whole, we can say that Iran has approached that goal of independence. But it is the Iranian people are part of that system, and they have to be on the ground for it to work.
Sorry to jump in there. We're running short of time for tonight's program. Allow me to thank my guests, academic and political analyst Hakim Esaghlai Bidia, joining us from Tehran, and thanks to Iranian affairs expert Karim Shahrato speaking to us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dha min ba'din, wallahu samiyun alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, "My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing." And when she bore her, she said, "My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against the evil of the outcast Satan." Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, "O Mary, from where does this come for you?" She said, "It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning."
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 149th day, with the death toll exceeding 30,300, mostly women and children. Several Israeli forces are killed and their military equipment destroyed as Palestinian fighters carry out more retaliatory operations across Gaza. Also in the headlines, a top Hamas official says talks are taking place in the Egyptian capital Cairo with the hope of finalizing a ceasefire deal in Gaza. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The ongoing Israeli genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip keeps taking a heavy toll on civilians, with scores killed in the regime's attacks. For the second time in less than 48 hours, Israeli troops opened fire on Palestinians who were waiting for aid in Gaza City, killing one and injuring dozens. At least 11 civilians were also killed in an Israeli airstrike that targeted a tent for displaced people in Rafah. Dozens of civilians were killed in Israeli strikes in Khan Yunis and Deir al-Bala in southern and central Gaza. Israeli forces committed 10 massacres during the past day. The death toll from Israel's onslaught on Gaza since early October has surpassed 30,300, most of them women and children. More than 70,000 others have been injured, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. Palestinian fighters are putting up stiff resistance to Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground rages on. The military wing of Hamas resistance movement said its fighters blew up a booby-trapped house that resulted in death or injury of at least 7 regime soldiers in Khan Yunis. The Al-Qassam Brigade said the group was also able to seize an Israeli Skylark drone in Gaza City. Israel confirmed the deaths of 3 soldiers in the Gaza Strip. It also said 14 others were injured, 6 of them seriously. The regime says 245 of its troops have been killed since it launched a ground invasion of Gaza in late October. Palestinian groups, however, say that the regime is intentionally hiding the real number of casualties among its forces in order to avoid public anger. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement has warned the Israeli Prime Minister over the regime's post-war scheme. The spokesman for the military wing of the Islamic Jihad said the future of the Gaza Strip will only be determined by the resistance movements, not Israel. Abu Hamza said the end of the war in Gaza will be the prelude to the complete destruction of the Israeli regime. He reiterated the group's readiness to continue the fight with Israel as long as it takes. The comments come as Israel plans to control and occupy Gaza after a possible truce there. Abu Hamza also called on Arabs and Muslims to provide Palestine with weapons. He urged all Palestinians to mobilize against Israel in the first day of the holy fasting month of Ramadan. A top Hamas official says the movement has received an invitation to visit Cairo for Gaza ceasefire talks that resume later on Sunday. Osama Hamdan says Hamas is keen to achieve a result that satisfies Palestinians. Hamdan says, however, that Israel does not want a ceasefire. He says the regime is killing Palestinians and the U.S. is giving it time to continue the crimes. Egyptian sources say the Palestinian and Israeli negotiators have already agreed on the duration of a ceasefire and a prisoner swap. Draft proposals indicate 400 Palestinian prisoners will be released in exchange for 40 Israeli captives. The proposals also include the daily delivery of 500 trucks of humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip, with both sides halting their military operations. However, the Israeli military withdrawal from the coastal strip remains a bone of contention. Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian teen in a violent raid near the Jalazun refugee camp north of the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. According to Palestinian media, 13-year-old Mohammed Khaled Zaid died as a result of serious wounds that he sustained after being hit with the regime forces' live fire. Local sources said Israeli forces left the teen bleeding for about an hour before handing him over to Palestinian ambulance services. Another Palestinian teenager was also injured during the raid. Israel has intensified its incursions across the West Bank since launching a genocidal war on the Gaza Strip on October 7. Attacks by Israeli forces and settlers have left more than 400 Palestinians dead in the occupied territory since then. A correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us with more details about the latest Israeli deadly raid in the occupied West Bank.
This team was shot dead by the Israeli soldiers last night near Al-Jalazun refugee camp. We have to mention that there's the illegal settlement of Beit Il. It's adjacent to the refugee camp of Al-Jalazun. And the Israelis claim that this Palestinian child, 13-year-old Mohammed Zaid, tried to throw Molotov cocktails at the nearby Israeli settlement. And then the Israelis opened fire at him, shot him, and left him bleeding. Then the Israelis were reporting that a Palestinian was shot and killed under the bridge of Al-Jalazun refugee camp. There are walls separating the illegal settlement of Beit Il. There are towers surrounding the settlement of Beit Il with Israeli soldiers there. So it's according to the family, it's impossible for this child to go to this nearby area and to try to throw Molotov cocktails. But as usual, the Israelis try to show that it's another act by Palestinians to carry out any form of aggression against the Israelis, and that's why they opened fire. He was only 13 years old, he was the only child of his family, and he was shot and killed. This means the number of Palestinians who were killed by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October rises to 419. Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces, and a number were killed by the settlers.
For several weeks, Israel has been the scene of protests against the policies of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. We discussed this with our guests in our news review program. Let's see what they had to say.
And now it's time for the news review section, where we delve deeper into one of the day's top stories. So stay with us. Now, thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Several protesters were detained after clashing with the regime's forces, who used tear gas to disperse the demonstrators.
I'm against the government which behaves like the worst fascist that ever be. They studied everything that Germany did to us. We are doing now to the Palestinians.
Protesters also called for holding snap elections. They demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. Also, thousands of Israelis led by the families of the captives marched to occupied Al-Quds, demanding a truce deal. Israel's premier has been under fire for putting his political interests in Gaza before the lives of the captives. Netanyahu is embroiled in a series of scandals. His charges, amongst others, include fraud and breach of trust. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. Now, to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Saeed Khan, Professor of Near East and Global Studies from Wayne State University from Detroit, Michigan, and also Mr. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist from Houston, Texas. Gentlemen, welcome to the news review section. Now, beginning with you, Mr. Khan, we've seen these anti-Netanyahu demos in Tel Aviv on a weekly basis. They want his resignation and are also demanding a ceasefire now, thus the release of the Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. So why is Netanyahu not listening to his own people? Many are blasting him for, prioritizing his political interests in Gaza over the lives of the captives. Now, your thoughts on that? Do you think he is prolonging this onslaught because he knows he will be convicted of genocide when all this ends?
Well, I think even before a charge of genocide, there is the issue about him being convicted on several other charges that predated October the 7th, including fraud and corruption. So Netanyahu's political instincts are very much a matter of survival. And unfortunately, as we see even in the United States with some politicians, this seems to then be the main priority to even prolong something as egregious as what is going on here. I know that is a very, very cynical view to go ahead and have, but these are very extraordinary circumstances, and one has to go ahead and take a look at that in the calculus. The second thing, though, of course, is the fact that he is enabled to remain in power, not just by his own political party, but also by several Western governments. I mean, including, of course, unfortunately, the United States. The images that you're showing of the streets of Tel Aviv and the demonstrations are images that are not present within the American coverage, at least, in mainstream media, and certainly, I would argue, even more broadly in Western media. If there was a sense of seeing how unpopular he is even within his own country, that a so-called democracy has then people taking to the streets with the frequency that they are, perhaps then there would be some kind of recognition that Netanyahu, not only acting in an anti-democratic way, but acting in a way that is clearly just for his own interests and self-interest, would then evoke a different kind of reaction. But this preservation of Netanyahu and the conduct that he is perpetrating seems to be, one would argue, conspiratorial.
That's right, Mr. Naqvi. Like Mr. Khan said, it seems that even Netanyahu's ally Washington is frustrated of his actions on Gaza, as the backlash has been so severe that it has also further tarnished the U.S. image, especially being the so-called advocates of human rights. Now, it's also having effects on the upcoming elections as well. As we've seen, people are now calling Biden Joe, Genocide Joe. Analysts are saying that Washington has realized this and just recently, quote, in a PR stunt, airdropped some aid to Gaza to be able to say that they went complicit in this genocide.
America's seriousness in calling for a ceasefire or to persuade the Zionist regime for a ceasefire seems more like a marketing campaign by the Biden government, because clearly the people of the U.S., the masses who have come out to protest, have made it clear that they want a permanent ceasefire in occupied Palestine. But having said that, if the U.S. was serious in pressurizing the Zionist regime, because we all know how dependent the Zionist regime is financially to the U.S., how dependent they are militarily and diplomatically throughout the world, we know that the U.S. regime is one of the only few countries that still supported the Zionist regime in the United Nations Security Council. And now recently they signed off $12 billion. Congress signed off $12 billion in military aid to the Zionist regime not too long ago. The main perpetrator in the US government, apart from Biden, genocide Biden, is the Secretary of State Blinken, who seems to be one of the perpetrators of the support that the Zionist regime receives from the American government. It almost seems like a facade in which we see the likes of Blinken and other members of the Biden government who claim to want peace, who claim to want the end of the genocide in Gaza, but their actions say otherwise. And that goes on to show the vulnerability of the United States government. That goes on to show the vulnerability of the Zionist regime and its leaders, Netanyahu and Ben-Gavir, right now. Because to win this election, the Democrats and Republicans both need to take a stance on Israel. The Democrats have a softer stance, but their support is apparent. And so the hypocrisy that we see in the bipartisan political party system here in the US is obvious. No matter who you are, a Democrat or a Republican, they're both one when it comes to their support for the Zionist regime. And that is because of lobby groups like AIPAC, who bear so much influence on these politicians who hold office, that to them, the American people, the US citizens of the US, aren't as important as their relations with Netanyahu and the Zionist regime. It is because lobby groups like AIPAC fund them and support them.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Mr. Saeed Khan, Professor of Near East and Global Studies from Wayne State University, Detroit, Michigan, and also Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist from Houston, Texas. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. And with that, we come to the end of this news review section. Thank you for staying tuned.
Thousands of people are taking to the streets across the world to protest against the war in Gaza and to demand an end to Israel's genocide. Our correspondents have filled us in on the reports they sent us from Rome and from Paris. Let's take a listen.
Italian cities were the scene of rallies on Saturday in solidarity with Gaza and in condemnation of Israel's inhuman attacks against Palestinian civilians. Rome, Florence, Pisa, Syracuse, Grosseto. For the umpteenth time since early October, tens of thousands of people across Italy took to the streets of their respective cities to express their anger at the Italian government for unconditionally supporting the Israeli regime and at the international community for its complicity in Gaza genocide. Italy has not condemned Israel for the killing of unarmed Palestinians collecting aid in Gaza in an attack that killed more than 100 people on Thursday. However, Rome has called on the Israeli regime to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators behind the aid massacre to justice.
The Italian police crackdown on students during Palestine solidarity demonstrations in the past weeks has sparked outrage across Italy. Student collectives are at loggerheads with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and police over the rise in attacks against students.
Thousands of artists, curators and critics have signed an open letter calling on the Venice Biennale, one of the world's largest contemporary visual art exhibitions, to exclude the Israeli National Pavilion from this year's art exhibition due to the brutal assaults against the civilians in Gaza. However, Italy's culture minister has firmly backed Israel's participation. Max Civili, Rome.
Across France, supporters of Palestine marched to denounce Israel's constant atrocities and war crimes during their latest invasion of Gaza. The world has been stunned by what's been dubbed the Flower Massacre, the death of over 100 Palestinians and the wounding of nearly 800 others after Israeli troops opened fire on civilians waiting for food. Some 600,000 people in Gaza, or 25% of the population, are currently at risk of famine.
The French Foreign Ministry said the shootings were unjustifiable and backed a call for an independent investigation by the United Nations. French President Emmanuel Macron demanded truth, justice, respect for international law, and called for an immediate ceasefire.
And the Western world was...
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two.
Il a deux visages.
Macron is two-faced. It is only since the International Criminal Court announced that they would investigate Israel that Macron began to say just a few words which were not in total support of Israel. He continues to give arms to Israel and is as complicit as the leaders in Tel Aviv.
Many marchers carried signs of deceased United States soldier Aaron Bushnell, who set himself on fire at the Israeli embassy in Washington after declaring that he will no longer be complicit in genocide. After the start of Israel's invasion of Gaza, France imposed a nationwide ban on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around the country. Activists were forced to endure mass arrests, a record number of fines, and the infamous brutality of France's police. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans, and I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
The limelight.
Footage circulating across the social media shows several American war veterans burning their uniforms in tribute to a U.S. airman who recently died after setting himself on fire in protest at his country's support for the Israeli regime. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. USA Today has covered this story and tells us more. Aaron Bushnell, an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force, set himself on fire outside the embassy of the Israeli regime in protest at the campaign of death and destruction in Gaza. U.S. officials say he died on Saturday night, 24th of February. In a video of the incident, the man in uniform identifies himself as Aaron Bushnell and says, "I will no longer be complicit in genocide." He later says what he's about to do is minimal compared with the suffering of the Palestinians. In the video footage, Aaron Bushnell is seen setting his phone on the ground before pouring an unknown liquid from a metal bottle over himself and igniting it whilst yelling, "Free Palestine," repeatedly. He then set himself on fire as he was standing in front of the embassy gates in Washington, D.C. on Saturday night, 24th of February. The 25-year-old airman eventually fell to the ground as police officers rushed to douse the flames. He was rushed to hospital with critical life-threatening injuries. Citing U.S. officials, USA Today said on Saturday night that he had passed away. A U.S. Air Force spokeswoman, Anne Stefanik, also confirmed Bushnell was an active-duty airman. Both the U.S. Secret Service and Metropolitan Police Department responded to the incident. The video footage was live-streamed on the social media platform Twitch, but it was later removed. Protests against the Israeli regime have become a near-daily occurrence across the United States since the regime launched its bloody campaign in Gaza in early October. The Israeli embassy in Washington has also been the site of constant protests of one sort or another. International rights groups have repeatedly said Washington, the Zionist regime's staunchest ally, risks complicity in the war crimes of Israel in Gaza. The administration of President Joe Biden has provided roughly 21,000 precision-guided munitions to Israel since the October launch of its bloody war on Gaza. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has accounted the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden responsible for the death of an American soldier who set himself on fire outside the embassy of the Israeli regime in protest at Tel Aviv's war on Gaza. Hamas said in a statement in the early hours of Tuesday, 27th of February, the Biden administration bears full responsibility for the death of the airman in the U.S. Army, Aaron Bushnell, due to his policy that has supported the Zionist regime in its genocidal war against our Palestinian people. Hamas stressed that the tragic incident acknowledges the growing anger among the American people who reject their country's support for Israel. The movement also offered its condolences to the family and friends of the American pilot. It noted, Aaron Bushnell immortalized his name as a defender of humanitarian values and the oppressed Palestinian people, just as did the American activist Rachel Corrie, who was crushed to death by an Israeli bulldozer in Rafah in southern Gaza in 2003. In March of 2003, Rachel Corrie was killed whilst she was protesting against the Israeli destruction of Palestinian homes in Gaza. Also, the website of Democracy Now! Reports a friend of Aaron Bushnell, the American soldier who set himself on fire in protest at Israel's war on Gaza, says the self-immolated soldier did not die in vain as he brought the Israeli-American genocide in Palestine into the spotlight. Speaking with the independent American news program, Levi Pierpont said, his views on wars and those of his friend evolved due to their military experiences. Levi Pierpont said on Wednesday, 28th of February, over the years, both of us shifted, of course, in our beliefs regarding war, largely because of what we saw in the military, largely because of the things that we learnt because we were a part of it. He added, I want people to remember that his death is not in vain, that he died to spotlight this message. He noted that he would have stopped Aaron from carrying out the self-immolation if he had known his intention. But seeing the way that the media responds now that this has happened, it's hard not to feel like he was right, that this was exactly what was necessary to get people's attention about the genocide that's happening in Palestine. Levi Pierpont noted that he personally conscientiously objected and left the military last July, and Aaron Bushnell also considered leaving the military back then, but decided not to follow the same path. According to Pierpont's remarks, the two found inspiration from social media content creators advocating for social justice movements in the United States. Pierpont expressed deep sorrow over the death of his friend, Aaron Bushnell, whom he met in Air Force basic training, saying He shed tears after learning the news about his friend setting himself on fire outside the Israeli embassy in Washington. The English website of the Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Video footage circulating across the social media shows several American war veterans burning their uniforms in tribute to a US airman who recently died after setting himself on fire in protest at his country's support for the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in the Gaza Strip. The video footage surfaced on Thursday, 29th of February. It showed the former troopers taking turns to drop their fatigues inside a burning trash can. One is seen repeatedly stoking the flames whilst leading the slogan, "Remember Aaron Bushnell, he's not alone." The show of support for Aaron Bushnell is held in front of a large banner emblazoned with the words, "Veterans say Free Palestine." The United States has been contributing ample political, military and intelligence support to the Israeli military's onslaught on Gaza, which began on 7th of October. Following the Al-Aqsa storm operation, a surprise operation staged by the coastal sliver's resistance movements. The Biden administration has so far vetoed three United Nations Security Council resolutions that have called for immediate cessation of Israeli aggression in Gaza. Washington has also armed the Tel Aviv regime with more than 10,000 tons of military hardware since the onset of the war. Latest opinion polls show a majority of U.S. Democrats prefer a presidential candidate who does not back the unqualified U.S. military assistance to the Israeli regime. The Reuters Ipsos poll showed 56% of Democrats said they were less likely to support a candidate who backed such an aid. Democrats also overwhelmingly said they wanted a presidential candidate who would call for a ceasefire in Gaza. 22% of Democrats in the opinion poll blamed Israel for the massacring of Palestinians in Gaza. The opinion poll results illustrate a potentially critical vulnerability for President Joe Biden, who has angered some within his own political party by supporting the Israeli regime. Biden's early and vocal support of Israel and his refusal to condition military aid on a change in Israel's military tactics has sparked outrage among the Democrats.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Amazon.
part one.
If you observe the Earth from the space, you may not find all natural features that you studied in geography books, such as mountains, lakes, rivers, plains, etc. They don't look like the same as you imagined. You can't see the Mount Everest from that large distance, but there are features that can be seen easily from the space, like the Amazon River. The Amazon River is approximately 6,500 to 6,800 kilometers long and has an average discharge of about 215,000 to 230,000 cubed per second. The Amazon River sets the record in terms of the sheer volume of water. It is the largest rainforest ecosystem in the world. The jungles surrounding the Amazon River are considered the lungs of the planet. It is home to numerous different species. There are thousands of distinct creatures in the Amazon, and you can find everything there. There is also a large company that has been active for 25 years in Seattle, US, where you can find everything you need except houses, cars, cigarettes, and predatory animals. These are actually Jeff Bezos' red lines. He's the founder and CEO of Amazon, who had big dreams since he was a primary school student. He's one of the richest men in the world. In the 70s, when he was a primary school student, he wrote an essay and mentioned his dreams. Bezos stressed that Earth is the most precious planet and thought about moving off this planet. He thought of a gigantic ship that could be home to people. In that time, Bezos just wrote his dreams, but now he thinks seriously about that project. Jeff Bezos unveils his grand space plans in his conferences. He talks about his plan for colonizing the space. According to many, this plan is not practical and seems funny to them. It is as funny as one person became the richest person on Earth by selling his books. Jeff Bezos did the same thing and now owns the largest retail store in the world. In the beginning, he just sold books and nothing else.
Amazon.com. This virtual shop claims to be the world's largest bookstore.
Here's my computer. Amazon.com up on the screen.
For many decades, bookstores did not pay attention to technological advances and the fundamental changes, and only used to sell books. They dealt with the return of the books and small sizes of the warehouses. People were also used to buy books in large cities. Bezos graduated from Princeton University in 1986 with degrees in electrical engineering and computer science. He worked on Wall Street in a variety of related fields afterwards. Then he thought about selling books online. He later said in an interview that when he realized in 1994 that the use of the internet had grown 23 times compared to the previous year, it was a better idea to invest in this industry. Most of the people didn't see this type of data useful at all. 2 years later, he sold the first book online.
We all know that a communications revolution is underway in this country.
What is the internet?
It's sort of the mother of all networks.
It's information highways.
It's kind of like your remote control to the world.
I came across the startling statistic that web usage was growing at 2,300% a year. So I decided I would try and find a business plan that made sense in the context of that growth. and I picked books as the first best product to sell online.
Soon, publishers and libraries welcomed Amazon's activities and started to sell and buy books online. Then, Amazon revenue increased day by day. In 1996, Amazon grew its revenue to $16 million. This company was founded with an investment of $300,000 by Jeff Bezos' Cuban stepfather. Net sales for fiscal 1997 were $147.8 million, an 838% increase over net sales of $15.7 million reported for fiscal 1996. This year, Amazon's book warehouses were the size of 6 football fields. At that time, people realized that a giant had stepped into the world of information technology. Jeff Bezos used a very simple method to earn money. He found an easy way to sell books. He owned large book warehouses. Amazon started to ask for small discounts from publishers to have the books, and then sell them online. It didn't matter to Bezos where you lived. Wherever a person had access to the internet, there was a branch of Amazon and the book would reach him in the shortest possible time. Customers used to buy these books cheaper than other stores. The number of Amazon users increased for the same reason. Amazon served over 17 million customer accounts. Customers also used to buy DVDs and musical instruments as well. In fact, Bezos used the book as a drug. People in all around the world were addicted to Amazon and its books, and Bezos tried to come up with new items in his company. He used to tell his employees that this is just the beginning. In the beginning of the 21st century, Bezos began selling more products on Amazon. Amazon started to suggest new products to customers every time. Considering all these products, books were the most important products for people in that time. Amazon's revenue reached more than $2.7 billion in the first year of the new century. In the following year, Amazon's revenue exceeded $3 billion. There were more than 20 million customers. Amazon moved its warehouses to other cities around the world. In this way, customers received their products in the shortest time.
Amazon could soon become the Walmart of the internet.
There were thousands of businesses eager to sell online. Bezos offered them a way to do it.
Amazon is transforming itself from an online bookstore to an online mall.
He transformed Amazon into a retail platform where anyone could sell their goods to his customers, and invited thousands of other businesses to be a part of it.
It's the easiest place for anybody, small or large, who wants to set up shop online, to sell online, because they can access our 12 million plus customers. Anybody, all comers.
In 2003, Amazon launched Search Inside the Book. Users were allowed to search for the desired term in a book without purchasing it. Publishers cautiously agreed that Amazon would scan some books and turn them into searchable text. In fact, Bezos was promoting the digital book industry at that time. In that time, Apple controlled the music market with iPad and iTunes, and Bezos didn't want to lose his control over the book market. A year later, Bezos set up a lab in Silicon Valley. He asked his researchers to build a device to read digital books. In this laboratory, he said to the project officials, "You must develop a strategy in such a way that everyone who sells books in physical form will no longer have a job. It seemed that Bezos wanted to destroy himself. At the end of 2007, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos unveiled Kindle DX in New York. It was a simple and light device that could store 200 books downloaded from Amazon with a significant improvement compared to previous models. Bezos announced that the price of best-selling and new books would be $9.99 regardless of volume and quality. Bezos was inspired by the sale of 99-cent Apple songs on iTunes. The unveiling of Kindle DX once again attracted attention to Amazon. This showed that Bezos was very forward-thinking. Bezos was able to increase Amazon's revenue to about $15 billion in 2007. After almost 25 years since the establishment of Amazon, the income has reached $300 billion. This made Bezos the richest person on Earth with a fortune of $185 billion, higher than Bill Gates and Elon Musk. Bezos still keeps his old things in a corner of his office in Seattle to remember where he started and where he ended up. Now he has more than 580,000 employees all over the world. Amazon plays an important role in the employment of people in the United States of America. He has made the Amazon very similar to the Amazon River. And now for many of the 310 million users of this site, it is unimaginable to live a day without Amazon. However, if we travel to the Amazon forests, maybe our opinion will change completely. What we see from a distance is very different from the reality of Amazon. Barnes & Noble was the largest bookstore in the United States for many years. This bookstore, which started in 1886 in New York, now has nearly 627 retail stores across the United States. This bookstore is one of the most important competitors that was pushed out of the book market by Amazon, and now has to close several of its stores every year. Maybe the fate of this bookstore is the same fate as the Borders bookstore, which finally surrendered in 2011 after 32 years of experience and declared bankruptcy. Another 1,000 small bookstores filed for bankruptcy between 2000 and 2007. Now, Amazon's share of the printed book market is about 50%, and this share in the ebook market is about 75%. But the question is, how could Amazon bring such a disaster to traditional bookstores and publishers in less than a decade after its establishment?
More than 10,000 employees will lose their jobs as a result.
Getting the news today, it's upsetting. We tried. We tried. We gave it our best.
When Bezos started selling books online in the 90s, bookstores had been operating in the old way for almost 100 years. In this old way, publishers were paid very late and had to collect the returned books. They didn't have enough information about their customers. Bookstores acted instinctively. Amazon's sales method quickly attracted the attention of publishers. Publishers preferred to hand over the books to Amazon to sell them at a discount.
My present concern, though, is that Amazon, by selling what are called front list ebooks, that is, the books that are in most demand, by selling them below cost, are creating artificial incentives for people to move from physical books to e-books. And I don't think that that's right.
The strange growth of Amazon and the profit that publishers received made them dependent on this company. Every time a book was introduced on Amazon, thousands of purchase requests were registered. Selling books became prosperous. Many believed that if Amazon had not been established, perhaps the book printing and book selling industry would have been disappeared by now.
Amazon was very important to the success of my book. I know that they do a lot of internal marketing efforts. They're able to tell what kinds of books people like, and therefore when they recommend a book to one of their customers, it's based on previous purchases and previous kinds of books that that person has read. So I do think that that really helped to get my book in front of potential readers.
When publishers became more dependent on Amazon, it was Bezos' turn to change Amazon's structure. Bezos believes that the whole market should be for himself alone. This means the maximum reduction in prices. So Amazon announced that from then on, publishers should give more discounts to Amazon, which reached up to 50% of the price of the back cover of the book. Bezos' decision greatly reduced publishers' profits. On the other hand, if a publisher like Macmillan rejected this offer, Amazon would remove the purchase option for this publisher's books, or customers wouldn't be able to see Macmillan's books on the front page of Amazon's website, which actually meant the destruction of publishers. Another important event in the new century was the change of Amazon's algorithms. Earlier, the editors and content producers recommended the books and reviewed them. But since 2000, it was the personalization algorithm that determined which books to recommend to whom. It was based on previous purchases and Amazon's knowledge of the customers. Then, if Amazon were to introduce a book, publishers would have to pay $10,000. According to Amazon's contract and confidentiality policies, it will never be known what effect these ads would have on sales. Kindle DX wireless reading device worsened the situation for the publishers.
In the limelight.
France's President Emmanuel Macron wanted to create strategic ambiguity by openly discussing the idea of sending Western troops to Ukraine. But he was so ambiguous that he sparked confusion and irritation among some of France's allies. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. France's national broadcaster France 24, France 24, has covered this story and tells us more. French President Emmanuel Macron faced uneasy reactions from European allies and a warning from the Kremlin on Tuesday, 27th of February, after he refused to rule out the dispatch of Western ground troops to Ukraine in its fight against Russia. President Macron said after a conference of European leaders on Monday, 26th of February, that everything that is necessary must be done to ensure the defeat of Russia including deploying troops on the ground in Ukraine. The Kremlin warned of the inevitability of confrontation between NATO and Russia if troops from the NATO alliance were deployed in the conflict, which would break a major taboo the West has so far been reluctant to challenge. Emmanuel Macron hosted the conference just over 2 days to the day after the Ukraine-Russia war started, seeking to rally greater support for Kiev, which faces increasing battlefield challenges and dwindling munition stocks. He painted a grim picture of Russia under President Vladimir Putin, arguing they had been a change of posture even in recent months that had seen a hardening of Russia's stance both domestically and in Ukraine. While there was no consensus on the sending of Western ground troops to Ukraine, nothing should be ruled out, Macron said. We will do whatever it takes to ensure that Russia cannot win this war, Macron added. Emmanuel Macron had refused to say more about France's position, citing the need for strategic ambiguity, but saying the issue was mentioned among the options. We are convinced that the defeat of Russia is indispensable to security and stability in Europe, Emmanuel Macron said. Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico said after the meeting that there was disunity on the issue among European leaders. There are countries that are ready to send their own soldiers to Ukraine. There are countries that say they will never do that, and Slovakia is among them. And there are countries that say that this proposal should be considered. Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson of Sweden, which is set to join NATO, poured cold water on Macron's idea, saying it's not on the cards at all for the moment. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said in a tetchy message on X, formerly known as Twitter, "We agreed that everyone must do more for Ukraine in Paris yesterday. Ukraine needs weapons, ammunition and air defense. We're working on it. It is clear there will be no ground troops from European countries or NATO fighting in Ukraine." Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said that if NATO troops appeared in Ukraine, we would need to speak not about